Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Welcome to Fri-yay. You are at the end of the week. Let me have some of that Fri-yay noise. Fri-yay. Outstanding. Well, listen, we're glad you're here. End of the week, heading into a beautiful, beautiful weekend. And JP's on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. Feeling sore today.
Sore?
From, workout yesterday.
Oh, you got excited at the gym.
Yeah, I did. You know, I had a busy week about, you know, 2 weeks ago, so I took a week off and I went back, and I always try to get back in at the same weight and pace before my week off, and
yeah.
It's never a good idea.
Plus, didn't you tell me since you went to this new gym where here in the Gadsden area, you're back on free weights where you haven't been in a while?
Yep.
That changes the dynamic, dude.
It works a lot more muscles.
I feel that. All right, well, I got the Tylenol if you need it. Just, you know, the old guys keep the Tylenol on hand. That's kind of the way we roll. All right, well, hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you on this amazing day. I mean, it's such an amazing day. I actually literally spent an hour in the Jeep with the top off today. A little Jeep therapy. I needed it. All right, we got a great show laid on for you, though. Coming up at 3:30 today, the JP on sports. So we'll talk to JP about sports going into the weekend. Don't forget, he has his own show in the Huntsville market. On, tell me, the Ump, right?
103.9 FM, the Ump up in Huntsville.
Up in Huntsville, Saturday mornings, catch it. It's called Off the Bench. We'll do 3:30 today, JP on sports. And then also, I got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff, so hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, didn't get to it yesterday. It's a good thing I didn't because it got bigger. The word salad bar. Oh, yeah. Every day's a buffet of word salad when you're dealing with Kamala Harris. So we're gonna take a little trip to the word salad bar and load up the plate because she's had some doozies here of late, and I'll talk you through some of it. That's word salad bar, number one, Triple Dipper. Number two, Woke Hollywood. Or should I have a question mark and then say, Woke Hollywood? Here's the thing. We're seeing the media industry right now getting a lot of pushback because they realize their woke movies are failing. And it's kind of funny. Like, I've got a major film that I'll tell you about in a little while where the major producer who's been around for decades decided he was going to specifically hire conservative actors. It's actually a pretty cool story. We'll talk about all of it. Number two on the Triple Dipper, Woke Hollywood, that's what it's called. And then number three, vote shaming. I don't know if you saw, but apparently the Democrats are worried. They're very concerned. Kamala is not able to break away. It's a close race, I'm not going to kid you, but she's not able to break away. So they have you know, in case of emergency, break glass and get Obama out. And so Obama's making the rounds. Last night, Obama gave a speech, and he literally got into what I'm calling vote shaming, basically telling black guys, you need to start doing more, even saying, I'm not hearing enough from the brothers right now. Well, come on. Vote shaming, that's number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me jump over here to the Right Side Way monologue, the daily monologue. Don't forget, every single day we do this. It's a series of commentaries and just giving you thoughts that you might want to hold on to. So let me just follow up what I just said a moment ago. So Barack Obama's back in the news, right? Gave a speech yesterday designed for vote shaming. You heard me, vote shaming. I'll dissect that more in detail a little bit later. But for now, just know that Obama, whose mother was white, met with a group of supporters yesterday and told them, his words, that he wasn't feeling enough excitement about voting for Kamala from, quote, the brothers. Basically saying what Biden said back in 2020, that if black folks don't vote for Democrats, then they just ain't black. It's pure vote shaming. It's also galling levels of extreme prejudice. Extreme prejudice. So let me ask you this. Have you ever been in a position of realizing that someone who has a position of authority or influence over you had already decided that you just did not measure up and should therefore, you know, deal with you with a separate outcome? So yeah, I just described the root of prejudice. And by the way, that's actually more than just racism. I mean, to be sure, prejudice is a part of racism, but prejudice can extend to more than just race. Prejudice is the preconceived opinion about someone or something that is not always based on reason or actual experience. Under the law, it can also be something that results in harm. And when you couple prejudice with a position of influence, well, then you get a recipe for disaster. Prejudice tries to get around barriers. Prejudice looks for loopholes and workarounds to maintain its bias, even though, at its worst, prejudice takes action against someone for no good reason. But prejudice can also be found in just like an indifference, like you don't matter as much to me, therefore I won't help you. Or because I have a preconceived notion about you, I will expect X and so from you and nothing more. Well, I had a personal experience once. Here's one of my personal moments of dealing with prejudice. So 21 years ago, I was preparing to take the bar exam. Made a late in life decision to go to law school. But I was doing so a year later than I had planned because 9/11 had happened and I had deployed immediately for Afghanistan. So after a year at war, I came home to take the bar exam and imagine my shock when I was told that some of my prerequisites had expired because I had been away for a year. Imagine my further shock when I let the bar know that all my prereqs had been completed in a timely fashion and were all, you know, straight up, only to find out that the bar didn't even care. In fact, one guy at the bar didn't care. His name was Keith Norman, and he was the director of the Alabama State Bar at the time. It didn't matter that everything was done to standard. Didn't matter the delay was going to set me back another year. With an attitude of complete indifference, I was told, with a lack of care and concern and a complete expressed level of indifference by the director of the state bar, to just go, quote, use some of that good law school learning you got and appeal it. Well, he shouldn't have said that because I did. I may be the only attorney in the state of Alabama who had to sue the state bar to be allowed to take the bar exam. It didn't stop there. I won, and then they tried shaming me when I got to the bar exam. In a room full of hundreds of people, I was made to sit in the front row middle seat, the very seat in front of which the executive director, who had just lost to me in my legal challenge, stood to address the room right smack in front of me a little bit later. So it was indifference at first. Then it was intimidation. Why? I don't know. By the way, he lost again when I passed the bar. Maybe he didn't like me. Maybe he didn't like my law firm or my law school. Maybe he didn't believe that I would do anything about it because he believed himself to be above my concerns. I've learned that not every form of prejudicial behavior can even be explained. But I've also learned that almost without fail, the bullies and the go-along-to-get-alongs and the calloused, indifferent individuals, all of them will at times allow their individual prejudices to stand up against you, but they will also often back down when they are confronted with truth. I say all that because, in my opinion, we're watching a revolution take place right now. There's a pushback from people who are tired of being pigeonholed by prejudice. I'm talking about conservatives who are saying to the woke elitists that enough is enough. Like conservative influencer Robbie Starbuck, he's been exposing liberal corporations left and right lately, basically making known how badly some of them have chosen to treat conservative consumers. And when faced with the truth, companies have begun finally pulling back from the woke cliff they were standing next to. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. In a world in which the mantra has become diversity, equity, and inclusion, we are finding more and more that prejudice has flipped the script into a new realm of negative action and indifference. Basically, in what amounts to a round of prejudice and corporate action, we're seeing more and more that if we are conservative in our views, holding fast to traditional values, even our faith, that there are companies that will lash out or at best simply become callous and indifferent. But I recently discovered an organization I got to tell you about. It's called the 1792 Exchange. 1792 Exchange. They have a website called the 1792exchange.com. And they have issued a report that's updated regularly showing 3,100 major corporations around the U.S. that it says have taken it upon themselves to treat conservatives differently, even prejudicially. It's named for the year that the American Stock Exchange was founded, 1792. It says, by the way, on their website that they exist to, quote, preserve freedom of speech and enterprise and religion by countering what it calls woke capitalism. The 1792 Exchange has a mission to develop policies and resources to protect us from wokeness in the world of public commerce. And in doing so, it's compiled a pretty darn good look at major companies that have taken it upon themselves to have differing standards for how they're going to treat people, not on race and gender, but just on values. Woke standards that automatically create a prejudice toward anyone who dares to have a differing worldview. A bent towards conservatism, and you may wind up being deplatformed or denied a loan or having an opportunity closed to you for no other reason than just a prejudicial view against your own views. Now, some of the examples are listed like Bank of America. They set their vendors based on their commitment to LGBTQ values. They've ceased lending with some gun manufacturers. It's also provided funding to Planned Parenthood as well as the Southern Poverty Law Center. They have a long track record of targeting conservative groups. Don't like the agenda? Don't promote ESG? You might not do business with Bank of America. How about Ben & Jerry's? They're listed in the 1792 Exchange Report, too. That famous Vermont ice cream company. Ice cream. I mean, it's ice cream. Defund the police campaigns. Opposed legislation meant to limit election fraud. Said the criminal justice system must be dismantled. And openly advocated for pro-abortion policies, among other things. How about companies that you might use every day, like BP? Like you go to a BP gas station, right? BP scored a 95 on the human rights campaigns for support of the LGBTQ agenda, and they pay transgender medical costs for their employees and their employees' children. BP is a big supporter of ESG policies. They also support the deplatforming of conservatives and media and basic censorship of so-called disinformation. But the 1792 Exchange Report does more than just make people aware of the woke prejudice that's all too pervasive in woke corporations. It also talks about what to do about it. Make it known. You make it known, you make yourself known to them, and you ask for them to revise their position for good cause shown. And when that doesn't work, and much like me with the state bar, there'll be times it doesn't work, then there'll be a need for legal or legislative action. The whole thing that I read about 1792, it ends by saying this. It said, quote, if conservatives don't soon make a concerted effort to fight back against woke corporations, then America will soon be transformed beyond repair. Look, in my particular case, I had a guy that was indifferent to me, could care less about me, maybe even prejudiced against me, and if I had just sat still and taken my lumps, it would have delayed my practice by another year. And really, what I couldn't see was that I wound up going to Iraq later, so it probably would have staggered in and delayed me by 2 to 3 years. I had to take action. It was for my family. But that's no different than what we face in everyday life. Your business, your own personal spending, your own personal investments, they should not be subject to a prejudice against you by others who have chosen a position based solely upon what you believe. If we sit still and say nothing, if we sit still and say nothing and do nothing, then that prejudicial behavior is going to work harm that goes beyond what we might be able to foresee. And I'm going to say right now, not on my watch. And I know this kind of audience, and I would say the same for you. Not on our watch. Extreme prejudice, it has to go. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, check out the 1792 Exchange. 1792exchange.com. That's the numerals 1792exchange.com. It's very cool. 3,100 corporations, some of which you look at and go, oh, I'm so glad they're listed on the good side. And then some of you look at and go, well, I may not be using them anymore. It's pretty interesting. But extreme prejudice, it's out there, and it's against conservatives too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. So we got plenty on tap for the day. We're going to cover some ground. And I will say the text lines are already open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it, same number for both. So I got to tell you, there's a bit of a breaking news piece that I'm fascinated with. It's just popped up on Fox. So apparently, Trump has gone to Aurora, Colorado. I believe he's going to be there this afternoon. Yeah, I think so. And they've already been showing scenes of the arena that he's going to be speaking in. It looks like it's a basketball gym size arena. So I don't know if there's going to be like one of the crowds of, you know, 100,000 like he's had in some places. But here's the interesting thing. You know, there's no telling how many laws are on the books that have never been fully repealed. So whether he can do this or not, I don't know. It remains to be seen if this law is still considered in effect. But story on Fox News right now, this is not part of my dippers. I'm just going with a moment here. Former President Trump is expected to detail what he calls Operation Aurora during his rally in Colorado Friday afternoon, a program at the federal level that would remove illegal immigrant members of dangerous transnational Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua. So apparently there's the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 1798. I mean, good Lord. So 1798, they passed the Alien Enemies Act, Congress did, to target and dismantle every illegal migrant criminal network operating on American soil. So basically, that was probably a piracy act, I'm going to bet. Or either that, or maybe there were incursions by the Spanish and the French. Who knows? There's no telling what it was. I got to look it up. But the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, Trump says he's going for it. He's going to use it to start getting rid of MS-13, Tren de Aragua, and all the other, you know, cartels and others that are operating. Keep in mind, he's doing this in Aurora, because you may recall the apartment complex in Aurora, Colorado, where Tren de Aragua gang members had taken over the building and were even collecting the rent themselves for themselves, instead of letting the landlord take care of his own building.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that Trump wants to get rid of dangerous illegal immigrants in our country? That seems like a foreign idea to me. I didn't know you could do that.
I realize this is racy. I realize that, what I mean, how many times do we say making common sense like a superpower? Apparently so. There's data from ICE that the Trump campaign is citing, saying there are now 13,099 illegal alien convicted murderers at large in the United States, which we saw that from ICE the other day. And he's saying he's going to, I tell you what, we're going to look this up during the next break, or JP, you can start looking it up now if you want to. The Alien Enemies Act of 1798. See if you can get some, even if all you get is a Wikipedia. Which, by the way, I rarely ever use Wikipedia on this show, because you know what you get. But that being said, it's going to be interesting. All right, text lines are open. Robert from Athens says, "Dear Colonel Phil, Obama's 'shame on you' speech will accomplish nothing. Men, especially black men, are shamed, mocked, abused, even jailed by our perverted culture and misguided laws. We've heard it all before. We're still ticked. Young men are not getting married, nor joining the military, nor going to college. What's the point? To cope with a society which hates us, when our overlords return honor to manhood, we will come back. Until then, we give them nothing." Robert from Athens with a very pragmatic, even pessimistic text. Thank you, Robert. Well written. Not sure I agree with all of it, but appreciate you. All right, we're taking a break. We're coming right back, and we'll check out this Alien Enemies Act of 1798. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about this one. Don't argue with me. It's this one. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're going to jump on in to the first dipper here momentarily. Let me get a couple more text messages to keep those cleaned up. John from Huntsville says, "Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, this is the way John does. Is every day it's the monologue. Also, did you hear that 10 million pounds of boar's head meat was recalled due to a listeria outbreak?" I did not hear this. I'm going home now to check the refrigerator. By the way, he said, "I just want to remind all the people in my Right Side Ruffian Pick'em group, there's two college football games tonight, and I'm hoping Boomer gets a lot of picks correct this Saturday, because he's basically in last place." Nice. All right, we'll do JP on sports later, too, and see how you do on that. Gary from Decatur checks in and says, "So does it mean the government supported affirmative action programs where prejudice against minorities' ability to meet required standards in certain job fields?" One could take it that way. It was like saying, you're not competent on your own. Brian from Huntsville says, "Biden and vote-shaming brothers." He said, "I guess he went through public records and found out that Corn Pop has not voted in decades." Wow. Wow. Brian, wow. Just going there. All right. James from St. Clair County says, "Galling levels of extreme prejudice sounds kind of like the same spirit behind LG Bay's." Yeah, I know. You know, James, you're just determined for me to read out your LBJ quote. I get it. I just stop. All right, let's go ahead and jump on in here. So, word salad bar. What am I talking about? So, you've heard Kamala Harris being referred to as the word salad master. I'm going to tell you right now, she's like a buffet. She's a word salad bar. Just belly on up to the word salad bar. Load up your plate. We got all the fixings, all the trimmings, and all the right sauce. And every day, it seems like there's something she says that you look at and go, "Huh, hang on a second. Let me process that." And it shouldn't have to be that way. Now, I am not going to try and tell you that people don't have gaffes. I'm not going to try and tell you that people don't have moments where they do something and they later on think about it and go, probably should have said it different. or maybe I wouldn't have done it that way, or, oh, wow, maybe I'll get that moment back one time. But you know what, though? Here's the thing. Is there a reason to hold her to a higher standard? And I would have to answer, yes, there is. Keep in mind that the person that she is striving to portray herself as, seeking to have the position that is the perhaps the highest position in the world as president of the United States of America, is certainly a person. Put their pants on one leg at a time, right? They're going to make mistakes too, right? They do. All that's real, except when they reach that pinnacle of profession, when they reach that level of professional, you know, competence, they're supposed to be able to keep a string of sentences together without sounding like they just, you know, had a little something to drink before they came on the stage. I mean, she says stuff sometimes you look at it and go, yeah, I'm just going to have to question your competency. And I realize I'm sounding, you know, like, okay, Phil, you're being a little brutal today. Well, you know what? She's asked for it. That's one of the things about politics. I ran for a state-level office. I know what it feels like to get out there and put your name out there, put your actual face on a sign and have somebody judge you, because that's what she did. She's not asking for anything other than what any other candidate would do. She is asking us to assess her by throwing her name in the hat to be the leader of the free world. Kamala Harris has asked us to review her and to find her either wanting or not wanting in capability. And I'm going to tell you right now, she is out there right now I don't know. It's like she's munching carrots every time she talks. I don't get it. Some of the things that we're seeing right now are coming together in what we call a media blitz. So she is like game on right now. Now, remember, she's been the top tier of the Democrat ticket now for, what, about 3.5 months? She didn't do a single interview until very recently. Like, none. And first of all, imagine this. This is... You've got somebody who, she was the attorney general for the state of California, the most populous state, I think it's the most populous state in the nation, the attorney general. That means that she is probably someone who has argued before juries, given a lot of speeches, made some presentations, even been to a few ribbon cuttings on a kind of a grand scale. Attorney general of the state of California. Then she was, oh, by the way, a U.S. senator. And don't forget, it wasn't like she had a long career as a U.S. senator. She was barely in office 2 years and decided she was going to run for president. And so she ran for president before and didn't do that great. In fact, it basically sucked. She didn't get 1% of the prize. She dropped out. She was done. She was getting cooked. Why? For the same reasons we're seeing now. And then, oh, by the way, she was vice president anyway. For the last 3 years, she has been the vice president of the United States, one heartbeat away from being the leader of the free world. You'd think that somewhere in there, she would have gained the ability to clearly and cogently provide to the world her views on topics when asked. You would also think that when you carry those vaunted positions, that you would have the ability to recall information that no one else may be in privy to, that maybe she knows details because she's been in more meetings than we have. And I get it. There were times when I was in office and I'd be in Montgomery and I'd think, is the press even in the same building I'm in? Because we just did yada, 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 and they reported it this way. And I get that. Sometimes the person in the position might actually know more. She doesn't sound like it. And so when we start looking at and critiquing her ability to you know, elucidate her thoughts, we're not being mean, we're not being partisan, we're not being, you know, prejudicial, and we're literally being asked by her to assess her. That's why she's out there. She's not saying, give me your vote. She's saying, tell me if you think I'm worthy. That's what a campaign is. A campaign for office is, tell me if you think I'm worthy, which means we have to assess it. And so she did no interviews. until recently. Got a piece here from The Independent. It's a bit of a lean towards Kamala piece. But it does point out she just began a blitz of the media. When's the date of this? 2 days ago. Vice President Kamala Harris has been criticized for comparatively few media appearances. She only did her first sit-down interview in August, a month after Biden passed the torch. She waited 30 days to do anything. 30 days to do it. Let me ask you a question. If you had, okay, I guess I don't need to be rhetorical. Here's the bottom line. I don't know why I was talking around. JP's looking at me as I talk to myself while I'm sitting here. So the bottom line is this. You're the Vice President of the United States of America. And the President of the United States just stepped down after already winning the primary. And you're the person who they're going to put up to take his place. That's the time when you immediately say, we're going to have a press conference. And you go out in front of the press and you talk to the American people immediately. And she didn't do it. She waited over a month. What does that tell you? She didn't know what to say. She was scared of how to say it. She was afraid she might get questioned. She didn't know if she could even put it all, and her handlers weren't putting her out there. They immediately went into, holy crap, we're the candidate mode. It was like an episode of Veep. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall. I'm gonna run for president. Run around the room. What do we do? Do no harm. Okay. And they went into do no harm mode. Listen, if you've just been, this is historic, y'all. Think about what I'm saying. This is an absolutely historic, unprecedented moment in time when one candidate has already won the primary, is still holding the office. He didn't die, that we know of. He didn't die. He's still there. And yet he stepped down because of pressure from his own party, and she steps into the role, and that, my friends, is when a leader goes to the microphone and says, ladies and gentlemen of the United States, I need to address what's just happened. And she didn't do it. Now she is. So, bam, here we go. The press wants more access. Well, she did Alex Cooper's podcast, Call Her Daddy. Spent a lot of time talking about abortion. On Monday, she and her running mate Tim Walz went on 60 Minutes. She talked about what kind of gun she carries. Allegedly, she has a Glock, we're told. On Tuesday morning, she appeared on The View, which was a love fest and a little bit weird. And during that view, by the way, I'll tell you about that here momentarily. I need to make a note to myself about Biden on The View. All right, come back to it. And then on Tuesday evening, she went on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and drank a beer. And that was weird. Beer, making a note to myself. She also went on Howard Stern's radio show where she called Trump a sore loser. Stern basically said, I love you and I'm voting for you. And then last week, shortly after Iran fired nearly 200 rockets at Israel, she did two sit-down interviews, but they were with local affiliates. Okay. There's a number of reasons you might want to do a media blitz this late in the game, and this article points them out. The first one is because early voting's already started, and she's trying to stay in the minds of the people. She's finally decided. I mean, listen, if Do No Harm was going to keep working, she would have broken free in the polls, but she hasn't. If she was winning, she would have said, "Do no harm. We need to start doing something." But she's literally in a place right now where doing no harm was getting her nowhere, and so now they're trotting her out. So one, early voting has started. She needs to stay in front of people. Two, Harris is looking at the fact that, you know, she's been laughed at on a number of things in the past, and she's tried to separate herself from Biden, and it hasn't worked. So now she's trying to get out there and separate herself from Biden. So what'd she do? She went on The View, and she said that she would not change a thing about what Biden did. So that's not working. And then there's third thing is that really she's targeting special audiences. She's finding those niche audiences. She thinks she can attract younger women by going on Call Her Daddy podcast and talk about abortion. She thinks she could talk to, you know, the males of the world by going on Howard Stern. And I guess she thinks she can drink a beer with Colbert and that'll somehow bring people around to her being the common person, and she's not. I am almost out of time. Do I have a caller on the line right now? Let me see if I can grab that real quick. Is that Sparky? Sparky from Harvest. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm awesome. Good to hear your voice. Great show today. The thing that's that's not perplexing about Kamala Harris, she cannot speak extemporaneously.
No.
She can't do a press conference because she'll degenerate into nervous gales of idiotic laughter. What's amazing to me is that the press, the minute they pulled old Sleepy Joe out and installed her without a single vote from the American people, the press felt it their duty to praise her as though she were a landmark, awesome person, and she didn't exist for the last 3.5 years.
Yeah.
As far as the press was concerned, they had zero coverage on her because she accomplished nothing. She did nothing, and if she ever said anything, she embarrassed herself. So all of a sudden, she's the second coming of sliced bread. I mean, come on. It's hilarious to me, and that anybody would buy this is stunning to me.
Well, and I agree. In fact, my wife and I had that same conversation last night. It is stunning, but it's also stunning to us because we see the worldview differently than they do. And yet there are people who are going to vote for her just because she's not Trump. And I think that's what's carrying her the most is not Trump. I don't think she's carrying the weight by being Kamala Harris. I think she's carrying the weight by being not Trump.
Well, we talked about this a long time ago. It was months ago. I didn't think Trump could win because of the anti-Trump hatred. And it is bitter. It is unbelievable. But I tell you what, I'm feeling different right now. I think the hate Trump crowd is going to show up in much smaller numbers than the patriots who want their country back and who want closed borders and want a good economy.
I agree with that. Sparky, good to hear your voice, man. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thanks, bye.
See you, buddy. All right, got to take a break. I ran long, so let's go ahead and take that break right now there, JP. We'll come back and talk about this. So the word salad bar. Did you hear about Univision last night? That was interesting. We'll talk about that and more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper, the word salad bar. And let me just refresh something I said a moment ago because I want you guys to ingrain this, all right? Soak this in because when a candidate runs for office, which Kamala Harris is doing, when a candidate runs for office, you are not being asked just to vote for them. You're being asked to approve them for the job. That's what it is. Casting a vote is just your way of casting your approval or disapproval. We get all this, you know, well, I think you need to stop, you know, picking on her and the fact that she, I mean, some people, like the thing with Biden, I'll never forget putting it out on social media that Biden was stumbling through one of his interviews, and I said something about on social media, and I got back from a trip. You just need to stop that right now because the man has a speech impediment, and it's really galling that you would do this. And I thought, come on. He's the president of the United States of America. And if he's going to put himself out there, he knows he's going to put himself out there to be assessed as capable or incapable of the job. Same goes with her. And when you're a candidate, you're not just doing the job and getting approval ratings, which, by the way, think about it, you hear about it all the time. The presidential approval ratings are out. Why do they do that? Because they want to know. The same is true, though, when you're running for office. You are running for office seeking the approval of people to do the job. And so when she word salads her way through multiple flimsy interviews, even the ones that aren't hard, like she went on The View the other day, and it was gross. I only saw clips of it. I will confess, I could not do an entire smorgasbord of the Love Fest. I had to just watch clips of it. Nonetheless, it was gross. And even in a gross Love Fest moment, she gets asked by one of the was it Sonny Hostin? Anyway, one of the hosts asked her, which I thought, uh-oh, they didn't see this coming. Well, what would you do different than Joe Biden? Oh no, deer in the headlights, what do I say? Now she realizes she's trapped. Y'all, this is a talking point they should be ready for. This is you absolutely need to say, well, I'm gonna put my own brand on things. There's certain ways that I would do them if I were president, but I've been vice president and I've been dutiful and I've been working there with him. He's been the president and I'm a good trooper, I'm gonna fall in line. No, she didn't do any of that. She goes, I cannot think of a thing that I would do differently. Bing! All of a sudden, the whole strategy of making her different than Biden went away. Why? Because she did it. Not because anybody did it to her. She was on a Love Fest show. She was in the safe zone, man. She was in, like, you know, the cry room at some kind of, you know, liberal university where you're allowed to go and get your safe space because you're afraid you're going to be triggered. She was literally in a safe space, and she still just totally hosed it. But then there's a 60 Minutes interview. Whoo! So 60 Minutes, I will, listen, I have mixed feelings about the 60 Minutes interview. I have mixed feelings about CBS in general. CBS, I realize that there's going to be certain members of CBS's crew that are liberal, some that maybe less so. There's some who want to be seen as true journalists and willing to be objective and try to ask the hard questions, and then, you know, they get stuck with what they get stuck with. But then there's others on there who are just soulless harpies who moderate debates. But she did the 60 Minutes interview. And it was perhaps an indication as to why they've tried to avoid scrutiny for so long. Because to his credit, the interviewer asked actual questions, and at times he really pressed her. Now, there's some things that happen come and go on this. I mean, three times in that interview, by the way. Story here on Woke Spot details some of the worst parts. Three times she refused to answer about her border policies and why the border crisis might be on her. She refused to answer why she was flip-flopping on certain things, or at the very least, she didn't give a very robust answer. These are not hard questions. They should be known. And I got more, and we talk about the editing that was done. We'll square up on that, too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, Word Salad Bar. That's where we are. Dive right in. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Friday. We're going to get you all the way to go home time. And I'm talking about a beautiful, beautiful weekend we're looking at right now. By the way, I have to make note of the fact that, speaking of beautiful weekends, that the people of Florida who were in the path of Hurricane Milton are still recovering. And we praise God, by the way, that it did not go into the full-blown catastrophe that we feared that it could have. In fact, that it could have. I even saw one person, you know, giving credit to the Lord. The eye wall sort of dismantled as it hit the shore, like almost like the storm took a nosedive for a brief time when it came ashore. It still caused massive devastation. Right now, I believe the death count is up to 16, and there are millions without power, but they are restoring power like pretty gamefully right now. So anyway, prayers for the people of Florida, and continue to remember those who were struck by Hurricane Helene all the way up into the Carolinas. Prayers for those folks, and if you're doing anything on relief and all that, keep it going. Just keep it going. All right, I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper Word Salad Bar. We're going to wrap it up during this segment, but I'll tell you, this 60 Minutes interview she had, on the one hand, I was watching the way the interviewer dealt with the questions, and he was very firm, and he'd say, yes, but the question was actually, because, I mean, ask her about how she's going to deal with the economy. Well, I was born a middle class. Okay, yes, but the question was, he asked her three times to deal with the southern border. She never got to it. He asked her about her flip-flopping, and he literally called it, you know, her changing of positions, her flip-flopping on the issues, and he talked about fracking and other things, and her response was not very robust. And then there were some things that happened in the aftermath. So on the one hand, I'm thinking, well, you know, CBS, good on you for doing an actual interview. And then afterwards they posted it, and I don't know if you recall this or not, but they posted it, and they posted two different versions to one of her worst answers. She completely went word salad bar on the question of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and supporting Israel. I mean, she went a humming, a humming, a humming, a humming around the world, not sure what she said, but tried to imply that all the things she'd done were the things she had done when she did them so that they were done, so they could be done when she did them. And I don't know. It didn't resonate. And then you came back to the edited version that was posted online, and everybody realized, wait a minute, if you watched the original interview, the answer they posted with that question is not the way she answered it. It's like they gave two different versions, and they did. And the one they posted online, well, that one was the one that was actually better for her. It made it sound a little more solid, more cogent, more firm, more concise. So CBS went ahead and lost traction on that one. In fact, so much so that the Kamala Harris campaign then began to have to do some crawfishing. Story here on Fox News, Dateline, 2 days ago. Harris campaign distances itself from 60 Minutes edits by saying, we don't control CBS's production decisions. Well, we know that, but then again, we also don't believe that. We really believe that what you said was, could you make it look a little better, please, when it's online? If you want access in the White House press corps later on, you're going to make a change, right? So CBS is now facing calls to release an unedited copy, and they won't. And it's causing quite the controversy. You can't claim yourself to be non-biased and objective if you're going to edit the results of the non-biased and objective interview and post a version that obviously proves you're not non-biased and objective. So the Harris campaign says it has nothing to do with the edit. Well, so here we go. We've got The View should have been a love fest, and yet she answered a question that tied her to Biden. And then she went on Colbert, oh, by the way, and cracked a beer and just acted goofy at a time when you have people recovering from hurricanes. Did not seem presidential. You look at it and go, why would you allow yourself to be led into that moment? Don't tell me that wasn't pre-planned. We've got your favorite beer. Let's crack it right now. What do you say? The champagne of beers, Miller High Life. Wow. And it also came across just spectacularly goofy. And then you got Howard Stern, Love Fest. And then you've got abortion on, you know, Call Her Daddy. And then you've got Last Night on Univision. So there's a bit of controversy. Last night on Univision, I will say this. It appeared that the audience was prepared to ask her hard questions that she had not seen coming. The audience actually asked her real questions. I mean, they stood up and they said, I can't afford my groceries. What are you going to do about it? I was born a middle-class child thing. And it didn't work well. And then there's also the controversy about, did she use a teleprompter to deliver her remarks? So this morning, as I'm taking a long drive to a neighboring county to see a client, I'm listening to David Webb do his live show, because yes, I'm a junkie for this stuff. And David Webb actually got on to people like me who posted the fact that she appears to have used a teleprompter. He said it was in Spanish, it wasn't for her. And I'm looking at it and thinking, David, it's not facing anybody else. There's nobody else on stage that could even see that teleprompter. And oh, by the way, I tried zooming in to double check myself. You can't see the words. So the question is, did she use a teleprompter? I don't know, but I believe she did. I believe she needed it. Because when she's speaking and the imagery is there, she's staring right into that screen and the words are scrolling and everybody can see it. I mean, now. You couldn't see it then. It was only facing her. So even Univision didn't work out well. I also heard a caller call into David Webb's show, though, that I thought was very interesting. He was Hispanic. He's bilingual. And he said he went on Instagram to see what kind of response they were going to get from the Univision questions. And he thought what he was going to see was a fair mix of people saying, you know, Trump this or Harris this. And he said, no. He said, they're all in Spanish. So unless you're bilingual or you have the ability to run an Instagram interpreter for you, you may not know that of the 1,000+ comments that were added to the posting of that, he said they were overwhelmingly pro-Trump. People telling her to sit down. We're tired of you. It's not working out. He said, I think she's losing the Latin vote big time, and going on Univision did nothing to help it. So here's my point. The word salad bar, is it doing anything for her right now? Is it? Is it doing anything beneficial? Howard Stern, was that really helpful? Howard Stern tells Harris the sun will go out if she loses. We're in for the darkest skies on the planet. God, I'm not even going to go with that article. But the last one I've got comes from townhall.com. Matt Vespa wrote a piece looking at it, talking about her drinking a beer with Colbert, and said, you know, even the liberal media is looking at that and going, well, that was just painful. So I don't know that the word salad bar is really helping her campaign. I mean, I look at it and think, what we're doing right now is being asked to approve her. And I go back to my earlier comments, and I'll wrap it again by going back to my earlier point. It is fair game to talk about the way she talks. It is absolutely fair game to talk about the way she talks, the way she presents herself, the way she tries to enlighten the world on her positions. and fails at doing so miserably over and over and over again. If it happened once, you chalk it up to a mistake or a gaffe. If it happens twice, you begin to wonder. If it happens every day, even on friendly interviews, you look at it and go, you're either not very bright, or at the very least, you don't think well on your feet, you don't speak extemporaneously well, and a person in your position is supposed to be able to do that. So what happens when she's in a meeting with Putin? What happens when she's in a meeting with, I don't know, the Pope? Who knows? What happens when the leader of the free world, the President of the United States, sits down with another leader of a foreign nation and can't think on her feet and can't describe things well? What happens when there's a natural disaster and she comes to the microphone to encourage and bolster the fears and concerns of the nation? Can she even do it? And I'm going to be honest with you, a part of her job is communications. And she's failing at it miserably. Because when you run for office, you are not just asking for a vote. What you're asking for is for the voters to approve you for the job. And this media blitz she's on is not helping. She's putting herself out there, and people are seeing it, and the polls are now reflecting that the more we see of her, the less people want to vote for her. All right, we're going to go take a break right now. We'll come right back, and I think JP may have some information for us on that Alien Enemies Act of 1798. Trump speaking in Aurora right now. We'll talk about that and cover down on some stuff and catch some text messages. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. Pulling pins on truth grenades. So it is a Friday afternoon at 3:20. Let me get a few text messages, and I'm going to check in with JP on some things he was looking at. Bruce from Springville checks in, says, Kamala has been weighed in the balance and has been found wanting a tow truck. I don't think I would have put all that in the same sentence, but I like it. Wiley from Gunnersville checks in and says, Phil, reckon that Glock that Kamala Harris owns has a high-capacity magazine? It'd be interesting to know if she's a California felon. Interesting. I'm going to go ahead and say there's probably not even a Glock. I bet she said Glock because it's the first word that came to her head.
For some reason, I believe she was talking to Charlemagne the God when she said that, and you could tell she said it in a non-authentic way. I have a Glock. I'm not sure I'm really buying it.
I mean, most people that like are into it would say like, yeah, I got a Glock 19.
Yeah, I have a Glock actually. Charlemagne the God doesn't sound very authentic.
Pray tell, which caliber?
Yeah,
are you shooting in 40 or 9mm? What you got? Using hollow points?
Yeah.
You plinking on the weekends? What's going on? Brian from Decatur says, Communist Broadcasting System, CBS. Okay, fair enough. TL from Gurley says, is Miller High Life the beer that made Milwaukee famous? Coincidence? You know what? That could well be. They're trying to scoop up that Wisconsin vote. They're worried. They're worried about Wisconsin and Michigan right now. All right, so speaking of worried, so Trump is in Aurora, Colorado. Now, Colorado has been largely a blue state for the last few years. It used to be red, but it's largely blue state now in terms of its outcome of politics. And Trump is speaking there right now, live. I'm looking at the screens. So the right screen in the studio is Fox. The left screen is CNN. The left screen is not even bothering to cover the Trump rally on CNN, and yet the right screen is. Why? Because it's significant. Trump went to Aurora, Colorado, not because he believes he's going to win the state of Colorado per se. It's a statement. He is saying, I've not forgotten you. I don't care if it's a blue state. And oh, by the way, what he's doing right now is he's announcing. In fact, his whole backdrop says,
deport illegals now.
Yeah, there it is. Deport illegals now and end migrant crime. That's the backdrop. And he's got posters on stage of illegal aliens who are here that have committed crimes against people in Aurora and elsewhere. And he's announced that he's going to take action by invoking something called the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. 1798, let that sink in. The Alien Enemies Act of 1798. We're talking the founding fathers were still around. John Adams may have done this. So 1798. I asked JP to look this thing up. What is this thing?
Well, it was the Adams administration
it was, okay.
that enacted this. And first I have to say the first article that popped up was from the Brennan Center and said the,
oh God,
the Alien Enemies Act is outdated, dangerous, and ripe for abuse. And said Donald Trump has threatened to use the 1798 law to conduct mass deportations with little due process. Congress should repeal it.
So first of all, the Brennan Center, isn't that run by the same Brennan who signed on, who used to be the CIA director, who signed on to the letter that said that the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't real?
I believe so, yes.
I think so, yeah. Russian disinformation.
Yeah.
Okay.
But,
all right, what else you got?
In terms of the summary of the act, it was, like I said, passed by the Adams administration. But if you're interested, the history of it, according to the Constitution Center, is claiming that it was passed to stack the deck, quote, against political opposition, criminalizing criticism of the Federalist President John Adams, but not Vice President Thomas Jefferson, the leader of the political opposition, and said that Thomas Jefferson and James Madison fought back, yada, 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 yada.
Okay.
But if you're interested in that, that's, quote, the beginning of it. But it pretty much, it gives the president unilateral authority to deport non-citizens who were subjects of foreign enemies.
Thank you.
And
that's the crux of it. So it's not truly about your political opposition.
No,
they want it to be about that. But what you're saying it's about is literally going after enemies of the state who are from foreign countries in the United States.
Yes. Who are subject to foreign enemies and supposedly has been used by FDR after Pearl Harbor to go after Japanese.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's not good.
Subjects of the Japanese government. So you can say the origins of it is political or whatever, but the bottom line is I think this is something very useful to have, to go after, people within our borders who are subjects of foreign entities.
So here's how we see that being used, and I haven't heard all the details because he's still speaking right now, but if he invokes this, I would imagine what that means is he has to designate a group, and like Tren de Aragua, the Venezuelan gang that is so violent, and it's committed. We've had multiple gang members from Tren de Aragua committing crimes in the United States. MS-13, the drug cartels that are shipping things across our borders. If he designates one of them as a criminal entity in the United States, then I imagine then he can use federal efforts to go curtail and deport them for being a part of it. Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying that?
Yep, I believe so. And it said in here that in 1800 Jefferson allowed the acts to expire and then pardoned those convicted under them. But I don't think that takes it out from being law. It just needs to be invoked by a president.
Yeah. It's not. Okay. That's what it sounds like. It's still on the books. Mm-hmm. It's one of those that in the event of certain things, the president can invoke certain conditions using authorities that have already been granted by Congress as far back as 1798.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Listen, we'll see where this goes. But right now, Trump's announcing Operation Aurora, he calls it, to target illegal immigrant gang members in Colorado and probably elsewhere. He said that one of the first things he's going to do is create a deportation plan. And the first members of the deportation flights out are going to wind up being the criminal illegals. And so maybe this is how he does it. I don't know. It's going to be a hoot.
And the only part that CNN wanted to mention of it is that Trump is playing up the Aurora gang crimes, you know. And
playing it up.
Then now let's move on instead of let's actually show the rally, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just playing it up. It's just, you know, it's just violent crime against American citizens on U.S. soil. Just, you know, golly bum. What can we even ask if it's what? Anyway, David from Hoax Bluff checks in and says, David from Hoax Bluff. Kamala who? I guess that's what he's saying. And then Russell from Rural Route 1 says, she also said if someone broke into her house, talking about Kamala, they'd get shot. Are you not required to retreat in California, only use deadly force if there's no other choice? She would and probably did prosecute people for shooting someone in their own homes. Probably. Castle Doctrine means nothing to liberals. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Coming back with some JP on sports. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. One day, you know, in the very foreseeable future, I suspect we're going to wind up having a bigger footprint than what I just said, and I'm going to have to revise my entire pitch. What am I going to say? I mean, it's like it's so ingrained I can say it in my sleep. All right, listen, it is 3:30 on Friday. We got a new thing that we started doing the last few weeks. So those of y'all that have come to know JP on the microphone here, he's been with us now. What is it, your second week here? Second week. Finishing your second week. Mm-hmm. It's real, apparently. So JP, though, also has his own morning sports show on the Ump in Huntsville from 9 to 11.
9 to 11
does a show called Off the Bench.
Saturday mornings.
So listen, here's the thing. The way I can rattle off some stuff about politics or, you know, military terminology, whatever, he can do with sports. I sit back sometimes and just try to figure out where all that stuff stays in his head. But so we're going to do this segment we call JP on Sports. All right. So we're going to go 2 minute warnings. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, JP, listen, Dazzlers, we break this down into two segments for those who don't know. The first segment is called the Three and Out. And then we come back from a break and you do 2 minute warnings.
Mm-hmm.
Three and Out, dude. What's your first of the three?
Well, first, I feel like I got to get this, just get this out of the way first.
I know exactly where you're going.
You know, recap the Vanderbilt-Alabama game, preview them, hopefully redeeming themselves against South Carolina this weekend. But some people are deeming this the worst loss in Alabama football history against Vanderbilt. You know, I'm not quite sure if I want to go that far.
The worst loss against Vanderbilt or the worst loss
in Alabama football history that came against Vanderbilt. I'm not sure if I want to go that far, but without going in the weeds too much a little bit, because, you know, I like to watch film breakdowns and such because I'm a sports nerd, and I want to figure out, you know, the real reason why Alabama lost that game. And, you know, but long story short, you know, if the Alabama defensive coordinator can stop becoming so predictable, and where teams like Vanderbilt can scheme circles around you, I think this Alabama team is going to be fine. I still think a two-loss Alabama team could realistically get into the 12-team playoff. So,
okay, now is that the Bama fan in you talking,
no,
or is that the host of Off the Bench?
I think that's very true. I think that's, you know, because if say you have a loss against Vanderbilt and then you lose on the road against a good Tennessee team, I could see a 10-2 Alabama being the 11th or 12th seed in that playoff still. So, although they made the route a lot harder and given themselves a lot less room to make mistakes, I still think this Bama team is going to be okay. But it was a very, very ugly loss if you're an Alabama fan.
I saw and you know, everything with AI, you got to be careful these days. But I saw what appeared to be a profanity-laced rant from Coach DeBoer in front of the media. Was that real?
I know which video you're talking about. It was not real.
It was not real? Okay, no. I saw that. I thought, surely to goodness, this is not happening.
It was funny, though. But, okay. No, it was not real. But, like I said, they got South Carolina this weekend to hopefully bounce back. South Carolina is not a bad team either, though, but they have it in Bryant Denny. Okay. And hopefully they're an angry Alabama team, and, you know, they're playing at home, so hopefully this Alabama team can shake off that ugly Vanderbilt loss and bounce back. But I will say, too, this was not a stereotypical Vanderbilt team. They were much better than past. So
their quarterback was on fire.
Yeah.
So let me ask a quick question about that before you go to the next one, though. Did Alabama – did Vandy beat Alabama, or did Bama beat Alabama?
I think Vanderbilt beat Alabama. I'll say it this way. Their players were not better players, but the coaching staff, coach circles around Alabama's coaching staff,
wow,
particularly Alabama's defensive coordinator, who is supposed to be this defensive guru and genius, and became very predictable and ran the same coverage over and over again to where Vanderbilt was able to scheme circles around him pretty much. So
all right.
I would say Vanderbilt's coaching staff outcoached Alabama's coaching staff.
Wow. Oh, you don't hear that kind of thing very often. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's a sentence that I'm not sure I ever heard uttered in the world. All right, so three and out, you got one down. What's two?
Well, we got a big rivalry game this weekend. We have the Red River Rivalry.
Try to
say that three times fast. Which, by the way, I like the old name better of the Red River Shootout, and they've changed it to the Red River Rivalry. I don't know.
It was scary.
I don't know if cancel culture got a hold of that one
or not.
Darn
right it did.
But if we want to talk rivalry names as a whole, they also changed the Oregon-Oregon State rivalry game from the Civil War to the
Oregon State rivalry football game is now the name of it. So let's make rivalry names great again. But I'm very excited to see this game because in the past two seasons, Oklahoma's had Texas's number. But this year, Texas is number one. Oklahoma is number 18. Oklahoma has a new freshman quarterback that they're going behind. They've benched Jackson Arnold. This freshman quarterback is a dual threat guy. He's probably a better runner than passer, truth be told. But Oklahoma has had Texas's number, so we'll see if they can beat the number one Texas team this time. I don't know if they will because I think Texas is much better than the last 2 years where Oklahoma beat them. But they've had their number. So, and if Oklahoma could pull off this win, it would really shake things up because
okay,
you've had Texas and Alabama kind of switching one and one, and then if you have Texas beat the weekend after Alabama beat, who do you put at number one? Because you also have Georgia with one loss too. The list of teams who are undefeated besides Ohio State is pretty small. So, a big rivalry game, but also if Texas loses, it will be very interesting to see how things shake out.
And by golly, we're calling it the Red River Shootout.
The Red River Shootout is a much cooler name. But we'll see if 3 years in a row, if Oklahoma can have Texas's number. That'd be crazy.
Okay. All right. Three and out. You got two down. What's your third?
Well, we have Ohio State versus Oregon, number two versus number three, which is besides the Alabama-Georgia game, one of the biggest games so far in the regular season. It'll be at Oregon. I still really think that Oregon is overrated. I'm not so high on Dylan Gabriel like everybody else is. I don't think they're bad, but I don't think they're the third best team in the country. But then you have Ohio State, who has probably the best roster in the nation. I believe they spent upwards of like $12 million to build that roster.
They spent $12 million, yeah. Which, by the way, that still irks me that you have to even say something like that in college football.
But, Ohio State is, like I said, the best roster so far. But both teams, this is really like their first real test of the season. Ohio State played Michigan State and killed them, but that's Michigan State. They're kind of at the lower end of the Big Ten. This is now a conference game with Oregon in the Big Ten. So that this not only goes a long way in telling who can win the Big Ten, but also rankings-wise, number two versus number three. So whoever loses is probably going to drop out of the top five. So big game. It's a good weekend for college football. You have a lot of good ranked games. So,
so it says a lot to say it's their first real game of the season, and it's number two versus number three.
Exactly.
I mean, that's like coming in strong on a first real game.
I know. So we'll see if Oregon can shake off and get past the overrated, because I'm not the only one who says a lot of people think they're overrated at number three. So if they can beat a number two Ohio State, then they'll shut up those rumors.
Okay. So you're not going to talk about Auburn at all right now?
Well, they have a bye week this week. So,
oh, that's right, they do.
We can talk about Auburn losing to Georgia last week if you want to. But
no, I don't.
They got a bye week. So.
I didn't even look to see it. In fact, it just dawned on me. I've gone the whole week without noticing. What happened to Bama in the polls?
They dropped to number seven.
Seven.
So not as bad. I was kind of expecting like 10 or 11. Truth be
told, if it had been anybody but Bama, it would have been 10 or 11.
Yeah, I think people are still high on Bama's roster to give them the benefit of the doubt, and they had the fluke game, truth be told. Like I said, this Vanderbilt team is better than the stereotypical Vanderbilt. So,
last week was also a weird week. There were more upsets. Vandy was the upset.
I believe there was five top 11 teams that were upset, and Miami almost joined them if they didn't have the insane comeback they did. So there was something in the air last week.
Maybe it was that low pressure zone from the Hurricanes coming through. Who knows?
But I think that shows too that NIL and the transfer portal, there's no quote bad teams. Like the lower end teams can't compete with anybody. And you saw that with Vanderbilt. You also saw that with Arkansas beating Tennessee. You saw that with Cal almost beating Miami. So the new era of college football, you can't write off anybody. So.
All right, so because we have a minute left before we go, I got to tell you, John from Huntsville just texted in and said, JP, who do you think is going to win tonight, number 16 Utah or Arizona State? By the way, you got last Friday's game right between UNLV and Syracuse, but your Saturday pick'em skills need some work, he says.
Listen, I don't think I'm the only one from last weekend.
Nobody did good last week. So what do you think, Utah, Arizona State?
I got Utah. I really like this Utah team, especially if Cam Rising is playing tonight. I haven't looked to see if he is. I believe he's off the injury list, so he may be. But Utah is one of those teams where they're going to keep everybody in the dark about who's playing. and you won't really know until you see who runs out there. But I like this Utah team, so I'm going to Utah.
If you have depth that you can bring surprises to the roster like that, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so the Utes over Arizona State, you're saying?
I'm saying that.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and move it into a break then. We'll take a break right now. We're doing some JP on sports. Did I tell you he knows stuff? By the way, he's not reading notes. He's just sitting here doing this stuff. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. I mean, just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we are in the second round now of JP on Sports. And this one we call the two-minute warning. So, all right, JP, I'm gonna be slinging you some stuff, and you got 2 minutes on each. And then we'll have a buzzer if you don't get it done in 2 minutes.
Cool.
All right, you
sounds
ready?
Good, yeah.
All right, the first one, go.
All right, well, one of the other big games this weekend that I did not talk about, we have Ole Miss going to LSU. It's a big-time SEC West matchup. Ole Miss number 9 going to LSU, who's number 13. You know, Ole Miss is looking to keep bouncing back because they had a strong outing against South Carolina last week after losing to Kentucky at home, which was an ugly loss. But they had a convincing win at South Carolina. If they can get another win in Death Valley, then it looks like they're riding the ship completely after that loss. LSU, on the other hand, they've been kind of riding comfortably. They have one loss of their season opener against Florida State, or not Florida State. It was against USC, actually. But they've been kind of riding comfortably. They got one loss. They've been hanging below the radar. But this is a big game, their first real big game, and it's an SEC matchup. So we have a fast, high-powered offense against LSU, who's got a solid defense. So it's really a battle of good versus good. So in Death Valley, that may give LSU the bump, but whoever wins this game, this is a big game determining who's going to win the SEC West. So another good one to keep an eye on. Like I said, this is a great weekend of ranked matchups in college football, so make sure to catch that one too.
Barely over a minute. You got in under the
wow.
wire on that one. Pretty good. All right, next one, two-minute warning. What you got?
Well, I'm going to go outside of college football on this
yeah.
one because it's MLB playoff season, and the Mets upset the Phillies in round 2 of the MLB playoffs. They're now going to the National League Championship Series. They'll be playing the winner of the Dodgers and the Padres, who is coming down to an elimination game. But can I just say, as a Braves fan, okay, obviously, both these teams are Braves rivals, but it was so nice to see the Phillies get bounced round one after they bounced the Braves out in round one the last two seasons. It was very nice to see them get a taste of their own medicine. But it's another chapter of the team who has barely gotten in the wild card with momentum, beating a team who is a top seed and should be the favorite, but they just get steamrolled. And it's, you know, the top seed, the top two seeds from each conference have a bye in the first round.
Yeah.
So they have time to sit back and kind of get cold. Meanwhile, the other team has to play a wild card game and then play you. They have momentum going. So it's like the last like 5 or 6 years, it's always been like a team that barely got into the playoffs that won the World Series. And it's never the team that everybody expects. So I'm kind of thinking this Mets team, with the role they're on, they may be that team this year, and they may win it all.
The Mets.
Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. And I'm one that thinks the MLB playoff system needs changing a little bit, because I like to see the best teams playing well at that time. Although these underdog stories are fun, you know, maybe get rid of the bye in the first round for the top two seeds. I don't know, but it's an interesting storyline. This Mets team has been the storyline so far in the playoffs, so let's see how far they can go.
Minute 43. You skated in under the wire for the two-minute warning on that one. All right, so you like the Mets. You like the Mets, or are you just saying maybe the Mets? What do you say?
I think the Mets will do it, but like I said, as a Braves fan, that kind of pains me. But, yeah, I like the Mets.
All right, you 2 minutes. All right, here we go. Next topic. What do you got? Two-minute warning. Go for it.
Well, I'm going to go into a completely different realm, since I like to be a little bit diverse here, but I'm big UFC guy. So we had a big pay-per-view last weekend.
Oh, no.
One of my favorite fighters, Alex Pereira, ended up winning. And, you know, if you're not big into UFC, this Alex Pereira guy has been on a crazy role, and he's one of the only UFC fighters ever that people are contemplating he could be the first three-weight champion in UFC history. Of, you know, he was middleweight champion, he's now light heavyweight champion, and now people are pushing him to go to heavyweight to try to become the first three-weight division champion
in UFC
history.
Is he bulking up or just eating a lot?
Oh, he's bulking up. So it's funny, he's fighting at 205, which is his weight class. He's 6'5", and
what?
Every time after he weighs in, he goes to his hotel and shows how much he weighs on fight day. You know, he refueled up, and he weighed 230 after weighing in at 205 the night before. So he weighed in at 205.
What?
Went to sleep, refueled up, ate, you know, everything, and gained 25 pounds in a night.
That does not feel healthy.
No, but you know, this guy is a freak athlete. So yeah, like I said, he's one of my favorite fighters to watch. He's on a crazy roll. So
what's his style?
Kickboxing. He's a kickboxing guy. He was a kickboxing two-weight champion in Glory Kickboxing, which is a kickboxing organization. Decided to come over and try out MMA, and has been two-weight UFC champion, potentially the first three-weight UFC champion ever.
What's his record, do you know?
He's 11-2.
Okay.
So
knockouts?
A lot, yeah. Most of them are knockouts. No, not tap outs. This guy, he's only had one win in the UFC that wasn't a knockout, I believe. So
holy cow.
He's something special, so.
Oh, 2-minute warning. You got it done right then. All right, so let's. What do we got? We got a little time left. Yeah, we do. All right, 2-minute warning. So you're running the gamut right now. You've done NCAA football,
MLB,
pro baseball, yeah, and then and you did the UFC. Mm-hmm. You caught me off guard with the UFC thing. Did you like the fact that I knew the word tap out? I sound like I knew something yeah. about it. I think I exhausted my knowledge of the sport. All right, what's next 2 minute?
I'm gonna end it on a kind of a fun conversation to have. Kalen DeBoer has been getting hammered for his fashion style on the sideline.
Yes, he has.
And you know, I was saying
T-shirt
how
boy.
I don't care what he's wearing on the sideline as long as he's getting the job done and he's winning. But then now you have your first loss against Vanderbilt. And I have to say, while watching the game, after I defended him saying he can wear whatever he wants and Alabama's about to lose, I'm sitting there, they show him on the TV, and I'm like, gosh, I wish he wasn't wearing a t-shirt with his nipples poking through the shirt and looking sloppy. It's like, now that we're losing, that really irks me. So, and he actually said in a press conference that someone made him aware that the fan base is not happy with his style, his fashion style. So we'll see if he comes out looking a bit different. But, you know, like I said, if he's winning, I don't care what he's wearing. But when you lose and you look like a slob while you're losing, that's, you know.
Come out there wearing a pink tutu and penny loafers and yeah. you're fine as long as you're winning,
if
right?
You're gonna roll out of, if you're going to look like you just rolled out of bed, you better win, because if you lose, it's not a great look. So, and, you know, Alabama has had, you know, Bear Bryant wearing a suit at the games most of the time. Gene Stallings also wearing a suit. Nick Saban wearing the polo and khakis. And now you have DeBoer, who's wearing a shirt and sweats. You know, so a lot of people are saying he needs to live up to the Alabama class, but we'll see. Maybe after a loss, he comes out wearing a khakis and a polo, wearing the Saban look, trying to, you know, win back favor of the fans. or if he doubles down and keeps wearing it,
go old school, man. Wear the fedora. You know, put on the coat and tie. Get out there and look like somebody. Just saying. You made it under the wire, too, by the way, but the music is playing.
It snuck up on me there.
JP on sports. Good stuff, man. And you got your show tomorrow morning. Tell them where they can find it real quick.
Off the Bench on 103.9 FM, The Ump, up in Huntsville, or you can catch it on the Ump app if you're not in that area. So check us out.
All right, good enough. We're coming back with hour number 3 here on a Friday afternoon. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 3 on a Friday afternoon. And listen, you know, we've been doing this for all week now. There's a group of Navy guys, all former naval officers that served together or served at different times together, but they really started off knowing each other because they were all class of 83 at Annapolis, at the Naval Academy. And there's 17 of them. that decided, you know what, we're going to hang out together, we're going to have some good times, but we're also going to do something meaningful. And so they are in the last day now of a 500-mile bike ride across the state of Alabama. They call it the Bamarama 500. They're raising money and awareness for veterans' issues. And Lieutenant Commander James Sherrard has been on the line with us every day giving us an update, and he's on right now. James Sherrard, how y'all doing?
We're doing well, Phil. We're about 18 miles from our destination on Gulf Beach Highway, heading west. We're going to drive by the the Floribama Lounge soon. We'll cross back into Alabama, and we're leaving as soon as I get off the phone here. These calls go so quick, and there's so much I want to tell you. So I'm going to say it again: Navy-Cycling.com is our website. There's an incredible blog for every day, and there's a lot of videos and a lot of pictures, and I just wish I could have 3 hours to tell you all about it. Maybe we can someday.
Give me a highlight for today. And I heard you're changing a flat right now. So has it been a rougher day?
I don't know if they call it this in the Army, but in the Navy we'll call it a snake bit day. About halfway through the day, we had to swap out my bike. We've got a spare, and I'm in a spare right now, spare bike. I had some trouble with my brakes, and I guess discretion is the better part of valor, and we decided to swap me out before I had an accident. It takes a little bit to do that. I had to swap over some stuff and the pedals and things. So me and two wingmen, we stayed back at our stop. Olive Baptist Church hosted us for lunch, and we stayed an extra half an hour there. So there's just three of us now trying to catch up with the group. We're not going to catch them. And then our group has had three flats. So I had a flat, and then one of the guys riding with us, he's on fixing a second flat as we speak. So I had time to call.
Wow.
Otherwise, I would have been pedaling.
Well, you guys, but listen, 18 miles, I mean, I can still remember my dad. I was at Ranger School, and I got an opportunity to call home, and he said, son, 2 weeks, you can stand on your head that long. And so what I'm saying is, brother, you can stand on your head for 18 miles if you have to.
Well, you know, I did send you a text, and I was you know, I wanted to get in before 5 o'clock, get a call in, and so I told these guys, I said, "We can do it. We can do it. I'll tuck in, and we're gonna pedal as hard as we can. We're gonna get there at 10 till 5, so I can call in to fill the show." And then we had another flat. We had a flat rolling out of the parking lot to get there in time to call you.
Well, listen, you guys are hitting the this is it, right? This is the last leg, 18 miles, and you're done, right?
This is it. This is it.
Well, what a great week. Has it been what you hoped it would be?
Everything, yeah. I mean, and like today, the snake bit days are the best.
Oh yeah, they absolutely are. Snake bit days are the ones you talk about. That's the one where you tap beer bottles later on. You talk about that day when everything went wrong. That's the ones that bring up memories. Did we lose him?
True.
Ah, there he is. Okay, we got him.
I'm here.
All right. Well, listen, man.
Yeah, you remember the snake bit days and.
Well, but thank you for what you've done, though, for veterans, for veterans' causes, and thank you again to all of you, each one of you guys, for your service to this nation. We appreciate you, and go get a well-earned good night's sleep, and then you know, work off your saddle sores in the next few days.
All right, I will, and I'm not going to tell you our website again because I know you always say it again after I get off the air.
Absolutely,
all
I'll
right.
sure do it.
Thank you, Phil.
Take care. James Sherrard, retired Lieutenant Commander, Navy, aviator himself. And, yeah, you guys, listen, check them out. They've done some very cool stuff this week. I love this, and I love the fact that we got to follow him the entire week. But it's Navy-Cycling.com. That's Navy-Cycling.com. They got the blog posts up. They show you where they've been. And what's very cool, I think, is not just what they're doing it for, the fact that they're doing it in their early 60s, by the way, but then also the fact that they have literally sort of woven themselves into the fabric of the communities they rode through. They didn't hit all the big town spots. They were like, they're going to small town. They had one moment that was just almost surreal as they came into a small town and a church wanted them to stop in because they heard about them. And the church was actually having a pastor appreciation luncheon, and it was all potluck. And they said it was the best meal they'd had the entire time. They sat there and had potluck, you know, church meal. And that's just, listen, that's just Alabama, man. That is just Alabama through and through. They had great times, and every town treated them like royalty. They got police escorts in and out of town, stayed in local hotels, ate in local eateries, hung out with local folks. Butters and I got to hang out with them last Sunday night when they were in Gadsden. It was just cool. And I'm glad of it. So good stuff. I got another call real quick. I'll take that for the break. Who's that? Brian? Brian from Huntsville. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, yes, sir. Lightning fast. Thank you to all our brethren, Navy brethren out there that are on bikes, your previous service, your current service that you were doing. And got to get that out of the way first.
Absolutely.
Because that's the most important one.
Absolutely.
And then I thought I'd mention the Alien Enemies Act. It's only under War Powers Act, and Congress has not declared war since World War II.
Okay.
So how can you do how can you legitimately do it when it's in the Constitution that way? I know they get ways around it nowadays, but I'm sorry. It's a War Powers Act.
Yeah, I think, I look at it and think he's going to have to declare a national emergency of some type or something. I don't think he can just do this by going, I don't like that group. I think there's going to have to be a designation of something as a terrorist organization or something else. Who knows?
Oh. And, JP, mighty fine update on football and that type of thing. I'm glad to hear the station that you're on because there's a bunch of junk on the radio all over the place. I want to go there. And, no, Vanderbilt was not the worst loss. I thought it might have been the kick six to Auburn, but
That was a great loss.
The worst loss for Alabama, there's two of them. You rank them where you want based on how old you are, is Bear Bryant and Nick Saban retiring. And this is from a respectful Tennessee fan.
Oh,
I appreciate the nice words, Brian. Really.
All right, Brian, appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend. That's funny. Okay, let me get a few text messages before we go to the break. Jim from Grove Oak, dating back to our previous topic, he says, "Hey, Phil. Hey, Colonel." He says, "Elvis had his pistol on him when he visited Nixon in the White House to discuss deporting John Lennon and received an honorary badge certificate declaring him to be an honorary DEA agent." I've never heard that story. That's crazy. Ken from Harvest said, "Now, Phil, Vandy had the football for over 42 minutes and caused one fumble and got a pick six. Bama did not give the game away. They were not ready, and Vandy out-coached and outplayed them. Anchor down. Hopefully it will happen more than once every 40 years." Ken, it was a question, brother. It was not a statement.
Yeah, I agree with Ken, but I wouldn't count on Vandy doing this.
I mean, the fact that you have to caveat by saying once every 40 years clearly gives me grounds for having asked the question in the first place. Brian from Huntsville there checked it in and just mentioned what he said a moment ago, that he's glad you're on Saturday mornings on UMP because everybody else is like a financial advising show or something at that point. Wiley from Gunnersville says, JP, he says, "The loss to Vandy was embarrassing, but the most embarrassing loss that I remember was when Curry, or Perkins, he can't remember, was our head coach, and Bama lost to Memphis 3-0, if my memory serves me correctly." That's a crazy loss.
That's a bad one. I think just the fact that Alabama was number one and it was Vandy adds to it. And
it's conference play.
Yeah. So, and it's the first season without Saban, so obviously those losses are going to get amplified.
And then there's a T-shirt. But okay. Robert from Ardmore says, "So the football guru does not know the SEC does not have an East and West anymore?"
Actually, that's not true. They don't count the East and West for the conference championship anymore, but there still is an East and a West division. So there you
ta-da!
Go.
Ta-da! Go ahead and hit you some applause on that answer. Good job. Good job. Dave from Madison says, "JP, Boomer Sooners. Hope we don't get spanked." And by the way, Dave from Madison, if you want to chime in, are you for putting it back to its name, the Red River Shootout?
Mm.
I think anybody wants to weigh on that can go ahead and say it. Do you want it to be the Red River Shootout, or are you happy with it being the, what do they call it now, the Red River?
Red River Rivalry, which say that three times fast.
Red River Rivalry.
It's not very, it doesn't roll off the tongue
like
the Red River Shootout does.
Ken from Rimlap says, "Hats off to the Navy cyclists. We did Bryant Jenny to Jordan Hare, 120, give or take miles. Wow." He said 500. "That's tough. Way to go, guys. Can't wait till December." By the way, I will say this. I don't think he'll mind me saying it. Yesterday morning, James Sherrard, the guy who just called in about the biking, he texted me at 6:15 in the morning, and he said, "I just want you to know, the only thing getting me on my bike today is knowing that I have to call your show and say that I got on my bike today." That was the day after Cheehaw, I think, or maybe it went over there soon thereafter. All right, lastly, David from Hoax Bluff says JP wins today. All right, there you go. David, that's his version of grading. JP wins. All right, take me to a break, JP. We'll come right back. We're going to Dipper number two on a Friday afternoon. Woke Hollywood? Is it? Is it getting better? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. So I got a thing here. I'm about to do a dipper on Hollywood, but I've got a third dipper for the day that I've got to at least touch on first. So let me just call it audible here. I'm gonna use some of my radio host discretion here. So my third dipper is called vote shaming. I don't know if you saw this last night. JP, weigh in if you want to. But last night, apparently, they have unleashed the Obama. All right, they're worried. In my opinion, they are literally looking at a break glass in case of emergency thing, and they say break the glass and pull out the Obama. I will say, too, that one of the things that strikes me is if they're having to trot out the Obama, then that means they don't have any up-and-comers. If they're worried about catching hold of the young dynamic vote, which is partly what he was there for, he was doing the whole hipster thing when he comes out. Dude, your hair is white. Your hair is gray right now. And he's doing the whole hipster high-fiving and juking the crowd and giving them the business. And, you know, and it just, yeah. Anyway, the reality is if you're having to trot him out, you have to realize they don't have a bench of up-and-comers to campaign alongside the vice president. You're not seeing a whole lot of people. Like okay, how about this? Where's the squad? Does she not want the squad next to her? Are they young and hip and liberal? I mean, AOC, can AOC make the rounds with her? Doesn't that inspire people? Don't they want the young barista to come and tell them how to be? Apparently, they don't want to do that. They would rather bring out Obama. What you got?
I think this points out, too, that the Democratic Party is, you know, truly Trump is running against a machine, not a person. And I think
that's a great point.
This points to, wow, as well, when you talked about how Kamala didn't do an interview for the first like 3 months after she was appointed as the nominee, that shows that they don't, that this is not an individual running. Kamala's not running. The Democratic machine is running against Trump, the Obamas, the Clintons, you know, I guess you can throw Biden in there as part of it maybe, but it's not Kamala running. It's the machine running behind the facade that is Kamala.
It's a wow. Okay, I'm going to leave the show with you. I'm going to go home for the weekend. Now, that's good stuff. You're exactly right. And listen, she has also made their job very hard. Let's not be kidding ourselves. She's made their job. If you missed the first part of the show, the word salad bar, that's what I called it. The word salad bar, we talked about how she's, like he said, she did nothing in terms of interviews for the longest time. And then all of a sudden now it's a media blitz. Got to do them all. Who else can I get? Is there like anybody that's got a podcast? I'll go do it. And she's out there doing all these. And a lot of them are like softballs. Like when you're on The View and they're wanting to spoon with you on stage, it's ugly, right? When Howard Stern is literally saying to her on the air, the sun will darken if you don't get elected. That's not a hard interview, all right? You're in a friendly, safe space. And yet she had her moments in every single one of them where she just hosed it. And I don't know if you saw this or not, one that I forgot to mention. It was not truly an interview. It was an opportunity to be presidential. So in the world in which we live, obviously Zoom calls can now also be televised. So there was a Zoom call of emergency responders briefing the president and others on updates for hurricane relief. And she's sitting there, and of course she has to ask a question because, you know, you gotta interject yourself so you can have the soundbite. At one point, though, it's kind of weird. Like, have you ever seen a football coach on the sidelines and they pick up their paper or their playlist and they hold it in front of their mouth? It's because they're blocking their mouth from being seen. At one point, Kamala literally puts her hands over her mouth as if she's trying to hide something she's saying, but like there's not a microphone, and the mic picks her up saying to somebody, it's a live broadcast. Apparently somebody was giving her insights and helping her with words she's supposed to be saying, and she was afraid they were coming through, so she was saying, it's a live podcast. that's or broadcast. That was a very weird moment. She has been asked to respond to why that happened and what that was about. And last I checked, her campaign has chosen not to respond. So in the meantime, she's out there doing this stuff every day, but the machine that JP just talked about has felt the need to have to trot out. I mean, like, oh, Lord, what do we do? They can't take her down. There's only 25 days left of the election. They can't replace the presidential candidate again, can they? Can they make Obama do it? Can we do that? I guarantee you someone in the background has said, can we just bring Obama back?
Talking about Howard Stern earlier, did you see he said during the interview with her that, I don't like SNL making fun of you. And it's like Howard Stern, of all people, who makes fun of everybody. I don't like SNL making fun of you because this election just has too much at stake.
He doesn't just make fun. He trashes and embarrasses people.
Does anybody listen to the Howard Stern show anymore? I feel like that's just he's washed up at this point.
I think they've got him under contract and they can't get rid of him. He has tenure. He has some kind of former radio tenure and he's allowed to just carry on. I don't know. But yeah, you make a great point. He's made his career off being a shock jock and literally shocking people with things that he'll say. And then Saturday Night Live did a really funny skit. I mean, it was last Saturday. It was actually really funny. And they poked fun at both candidates. And they said that's the way they're going to run this season. They're going to run stuff that's going to affect both candidates. And they were doing one as if Kamala was sitting on the couch watching the vice presidential debate and literally having to come apart because she's like, should I have chosen somebody else? I mean, it was – and what's her name that plays Kamala has her spot on. But it was a funny, funny skit. All right, listen, all that to say, I had to touch on this. I'm not going to get to the whole vote-shaming thing that I've got. But you got to recognize that when Obama comes out and gives a speech, which I didn't even finish saying, gives a speech and basically shames young black men for not voting for the woman of color, that's called vote-shaming. And it's just weird. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about this one right here, Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right. So I got a dipper here that I'm going to jump on into for a minute. Now, everybody knows, all God's children know, that sometimes you got to watch what's on the screens and make sure that it's not something that you have to turn away from, because when I say that, I'm talking about the big movie screens and the TV screens. What's also gotten really irritating, though, is when they build in subliminals, when they try to message you in the middle of something that shouldn't have anything to do with their message. And what I'm talking about is that, like, the ubiquitous now storylines that have to contain woke-isms. Like, you'll look at a movie and you'll go, what has that got to do with anything? Charlene and I were watching a show about Jamestown. It was a TV series. We were streaming the show, and it actually been pretty good. It got a little tiresome after a while. You're thinking, okay, how much can happen in one stockade? You know, there's like in Jamestown. I mean, how much stuff can actually happen? But, you know, the first part of the series is good. And then just totally went off the rails. Jumped the shark. They had one episode where in, what are we talking about, 1600s Jamestown? You have in this stockade that has no more than about, you know, 150 people in it. In an era in which, you know, Puritans came over, you know, on the boats. You got a transgender in the middle of it all. That's not gonna be a thing, but they had to have it. You got revisions of history where they have to incorporate things to meet certain guidelines, you know, to satisfy the DEI non-purists. And you've got woke in Hollywood has really gotten bad. I got a piece here that came out earlier this year on the Telegraph. The headline was Hollywood has reached peak woke. I don't know if it has. I hope it has. I hope it already hit the Laffer curve where it began to realize anything that it did that was woke was trending away from profitability, and maybe they're coming back to themselves. But keep in mind, the Motion Picture Academy that does the Academy Awards, earlier this year, for the first time, the Academy Awards, if you wanted to get the Best Picture Award, you also had to meet DEI requirements. It's not about merit. It's not about the quality of the production. It's not about the best acting that was in, you know, incorporated. It's not about the storyline, the plots, the music, the special effects, none of it. It was about, is it a good movie that also has DEI requirements fulfilled? So they've got, they call them representation and inclusion standards. It's DEI. It's so non-merit. And I look at this and think, okay, first of all, hey, Hollywood, I mean, I realize some of y'all, this is your career. It's your actual career. You made a name for yourself by being an actor or a producer or a director, a technician of some type. You've got people that are special effects wizards. And you look at it and go, why do y'all want to be associated with something that does not allow you to excel for being, I don't know, excellent? So here's the standards. The standards are, at least for the moment, only for the best picture, right? But even then, here's the deal. You got five new DEI center standards for an Academy Award for Best Picture. It's got to deal with things about on-screen representation, themes and narratives, and creative leadership and project team. You got to have at least one actor from a, quote, underrepresented or ethnic group, or at least 30% of the secondary actors have to be racial minorities, women, LGBT, or possess physical or cognitive disabilities. Why? Films can also qualify if their main storyline, theme, or narrative is centered on unrepresented groups. So the only way you can do this at times, if you're doing a historical piece, is to rewrite history. If you're doing a cultural piece, is to go counterculture in order to get your version of culture. And then you look at it and go, why is that necessary? Because the rest of us are watching a movie and we go to see what the movie's supposed to be about, only to find out the subliminal messaging is what they were really about. And it's frustrating. And then, you know, you look at like Disney. Oh my gosh. Disney, come back to us. Somebody, please recapture Disney. So Disney, and I'm pleased to find, though, that this has not made it into a movie production yet, but Disney owns all of the rights to the Star Wars franchising. Disney has it all. Disney recently inserted a new transgender stormtrooper. It's important you have that. If you're going to go fight aliens, if you're gonna do battle with a Jedi, then you got to be able to, you know, have a transgender stormtrooper, because that's important. The transgender stormtrooper's name is Sister. Yeah, I'm just telling you. Sister, by the way, wears body armor that has the transgender flag colors on it, because that's tactical. Sister was first introduced in the Star Wars young adult novel called Queen of Hope. Well, there's a name, Queen of Hope. I'm getting lost in this. What we know, according to the report, is that he, quote, served alongside Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, and Commander Cody in the Clone Wars, and he once held some reservations about whether the Jedi would accept his transgender status. But then Anakin reassured him, "The Jedi are about transcending things. I don't think we can complain if you transcended gender." They're not using the Force on this one, is what I'm saying.
Well, before you said that the stormtrooper is going to have the transgender flag as a suit, I was going to say, how can you even tell if it would be a transgender? Because they're all just white, like they just all wear the same white stormtrooper suit. Like,
why is that not racist?
Yeah. It's, and also, how are you going to have a gender of, like, it's named Sister. How are you going to have a name that is correlative to a female role? Like, that's not gender fluid enough. That doesn't make any sense to me. They're contradicting themselves in their wokeness there.
Brother, you're trying too hard. this is not supposed to be figured out. They just want you to accept it. That's all they want. You know, I'd have an easier time accepting that that lightsabers are real than to accept that this is the way it would work. But so here's the thing. I wonder, you know, when you see that article I had earlier that asked the question in its title, has Hollywood reached peak woke? Well, that's the question being asked more and more. You got a guy named Robert Davi, who's been in movies like Die Hard, License to Kill. He's been working at Hollywood for like 46 years. There's a story in the Washington Examiner today. It came out 2 weeks ago. And he's arguing that there's a disconnect between celebrities and the rest of Hollywood, citing that the majority of the Teamsters Union who works on the film set support President Donald Trump. So what he's saying is it's the leftists who are the key figures. It's the George Clooney's, Brad Pitt's of the world. It's the Robert De Niro's who are the left, but they're getting all the oxygen in this. And he's saying that the rank and file of Hollywood, which includes, he points out, the set workers, the sound technicians, you know, I've never understood what a key grip is, but there's somebody called a key grip. All these people, he said, they're the rank and file, and they are by and large supporting Donald Trump, is what he says. He says, so there's a huge disconnect in terms of money and the understanding of what the problems of our nation are. The left, the Democrat Party, has been hijacked by woke ideology, and we've even seen it. And most recently, he talks about AOC saying some just ridiculous stuff. All right, so here's a guy in Hollywood saying that. And then I got this. Right around the same time frame, the Daily Mail ran a piece that says, has Hollywood finally learned its lesson? Non-woke movies are becoming the summer blockbusters after a slew of preachy films have bombed. Preachy, there's the word. I should have used that a while ago. Preachy films. Says with, it's got one called Inside Out 2, a massive hit for Pixar. International ticket sales hit $600 million like right away. International is going like $1.4 billion. And then you had Twisters. By the way, Charlene and I saw Twisters. Really good flick. Have you seen it?
The original or the new one?
The new one.
Yeah, I saw it. It was okay.
It was okay, but the point is, and it wasn't woke.
Yes, yes.
They didn't go all climate change on us. Yeah, they could have. Mm-hmm. They could have, you know, had to make sure they had the character who was a little bit, you know, cross-dressing or something. They didn't worry about it. This guy in particular writing the article believes that we have a sign right now that audiences are starting to tell Hollywood more and more to quit moralizing your messages and just do movies. Just get back to entertaining people. Wouldn't that be refreshing? He cited movies like Frozen 2, Lightyear, and the Disney flop Strange World, which I didn't even hear of, that just totally bombed. They were propaganda disguised as kid movies, he says. Meanwhile, Twisters managed to just be about natural disasters without trying to go into climate change alarmism. And I like that. And I think the vast majority of us are good with that. But it's getting even more than that. So I got a piece here. This is what sparked all this. By the way, you seen the movie Shazam? Have you seen that one?
Not, no.
Shazam stars, Zachary Levi is his name. Actor named Zachary Levi. He, by the way, you'd like this. He starred in a movie about Kurt Warner's life. And I've forgotten the name of the movie. I'll think of it in a minute. Really, really good flick. Zachary Levi recently came out and endorsed Trump, and he's been doing Trump rallies. And he's, I don't know if you consider him an A-lister, but he's made some great movies. He's known. And he's out there, you know, right now campaigning with Tulsi Gabbard and doing others and doing rally. He's a Trump surrogate now. And he's literally out there not afraid to hang his name on what he actually believes, and it's conservative. The question is going to be, are they going to try and axe him because of it? But John Voight has survived as a conservative. James Woods has survived as a conservative in Hollywood. Chris Pratt is largely a conservative and a Christian, outspoken about his faith in Hollywood. Patricia Heaton has survived as a conservative Christian in Hollywood.
Well, one of the best examples of that right now is Dennis Quaid, who played Reagan in the Reagan movie, and didn't. It's funny because the discrepancy between the quote movie critics who rated it versus the actual audience who rated it, it was like a 97% from the audience, and of course the critics gave it like a 15%. But like examples like that of, you know, conservative actors like Dennis Quaid who can play Reagan, you know, one of the main model conservatives, it's, you know, those movies can still do well.
They can. And you know what? There's an audience for them. In fact, I'd say the audience is hungry for them. In fact, people are tired of being preached at, especially by leftists. If you look at, and I realize there's a popular vote that has to also contain the major metropolitan areas, like the New York City's, the San Francisco's, the Atlanta's. So you're going to have these major urban centers that are going to stay blue, at least for the time being. But if you look at a map of the popular vote, you're going to see the vast majority of this nation is red, which means that the base of people that are going to movies spread out far and wide across this nation is not buying the whole woke ideology. You may have population centers that drive the electoral votes in a state because they control so much of the state, But truth be told, there is a red base all over this. It's like I always say, there's more of us than there are of them. And so variety, here's what sparked this. Have I got time? I'll do it real quick. Francis Ford Coppola. How long has he been around? Francis Ford Coppola just came out with a new movie. I don't know much about it. It's called Megalopolis. It's designed to be somewhat of an epic level film, right? So Megalopolis, he literally said, what I didn't, this is Coppola himself saying this, what I didn't want to happen is that we're deemed some woke Hollywood production that's simply lecturing viewers. So the cast features people who were actually canceled at one point or another. He went out and got actors that he believes had been shuffled off of the A-list because of their conservative views to bring them into the movie because he wanted to know that he was not allowing cancel culture to impact Hollywood and he wants to get out of the woke mentality. That's Francis Ford Coppola. That's the kind of guy that when people say, what's Coppola doing? They want to know, what's Coppola doing? What's Coppola going to say? Coppola's doing a flick. Who's got the rights? And, I mean, you got people like Shia LaBeouf, who now is open about having converted to Christianity. John Voight, like I said a minute ago. And I'm just, listen, I think that this is a short dipper, but I'm thinking that right now what we're looking at is when you say woke Hollywood, you have to also recognize that, oh, by the way, there's a question mark after that. All right, we can take a break right now. Last break of the Friday. We'll come right back and we'll put a lid on it, get a few text messages. And I will tell you this, Babylon Bee is getting into movies. They got a new one out. It looks like it's a hoot. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're wrapping this thing up. I got to tell you before I leave it. I mean, we've got some conservative content generators out there now that are moving beyond just podcasting and radio and all of it. It's pretty epic to watch. And the two biggest on the scene are Daily Wire and Babylon Bee. And the two of them are now actually getting into movie making. So we have right now the second major production, movie-wise, I believe, out of Daily Wire. It's the one that that Matt Walsh kind of does the whole kind of Borat kind of thing, where the question asked by the title of the film is, "Am I racist?" And he does some amazingly funny stuff, portraying himself as a liberal, sneaking into liberal venues and interviewing liberal hacks on racism and DEI and critical race theory and that kind of stuff. And it gets pretty funny. That is, by the way, been surpassing all expectations in terms of crowd response. But the other one that's coming out, which looks like it's going to be a hoot, is the Babylon Bee. Now, I don't know how. Is it Seth Dillon? I think Seth Dillon from Babylon Bee and his team. Listen, he must have a team of comedians that just nail it over and over again. But he's got a new film coming out that mocks the, it's a mockumentary, they call it, a mockumentary. But it mocks the whole liberal mantra that January 6th was such an incredibly dangerous event, the downfall of Western society. Anyway, it's called January 6th, the most deadliest day. And it just spoofs over and over again how much the left wants January 6th to be seen as their battle cry. And it's just really not resonating well. Anyway, those two films are coming out. Let me get some text messages, and I'll wrap this thing up for the weekend. Nathan from Section, Alabama, says, with the tension between Biden and Harris, wouldn't it be amazing if an October surprise comes in the form of Biden endorsing Trump? Well, he did wear the hat the other day. I don't think he's going to endorse, but I do think he's been sniping. There's a piece right now that just came up on Fox News, like in the last hour. It's the top story on foxnews.com right now. In a hurricane briefing, the president in his kind of fade away talking began to fade, and Secretary Jennifer Granholm from Energy Department reached over, touched him on the arm, and reminded him he might want to let the vice president say something, at which he did not seem to take that very well. And he said, I know, I'm going to go to the vice president in a minute. And then he looked at the press and realized he's got a room full of people staring at him. He goes, talk about Granholm, she's my boss here. And then he threw it to the vice president so she could have her talking points on a Zoom that she was Zooming in on the meeting so she could look presidential. Unbelievable. But I think we're going to see more of that in the next 25 days. Brian from Huntsville says the Metachlorians rejected Sister. That's why she is a stormtrooper and not a Jedi. Okay. I don't know where to go with that, but okay. Got it. Marcus from Huntsville says, I think he'd find it easier to take Barf more seriously if they brought him into Star Wars than a... We got some Star Wars, some fanatics out there. Joe from Indiana says, when Kamala said it's a live broadcast, was she wearing the Bluetooth speaker earrings? I don't know. I want to know. We need to go back and look at the pictures. John from Brownsboro says, so a stormtrooper got affirmation from Darth Vader? Is that the message? And what does it say? Darth Vader is fluid. John from Huntsville says, James Sherrard and his Navy bicycle buddies got an A double plus for their awesome biking skills. I was going to give JP an A triple plus, but after that 20-point deduction for his final grade, it's an ordinary A plus, which means today's winner is obviously Phil with an astronomical-sized A triple plus for knowing when to call the audible, unlike the University of Alabama's football team. All right, listen, you guys, do not forget as you go into this beautiful, beautiful weekend that there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.